This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to this Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. This is episode 102. And we have four people on the screen for the first time. And you guys, ladies and gents that are back listening for more, are in for a treat because we've got some professionals on the screen for the first time in a little while. And in that regard, we have Henry Viola at HT Viola and Alex De Groot. You can find Alex at De Groot Media and Henry at HT Viola on Twitter. And then you've just got the usual pairing of myself and Wheelie, which you've used to. We're going to give you guys an update on the markets. Then we're going to talk a little bit about Alex. Alex's background as a professional working in the city for several decades. He looks a bit younger than he is, actually, folks. He actually is an old boy. So we'll find out a bit more about him later on. He's just been blessed with hair, a bit like Henry has. So you've got two bald guys on one side, depending on how you set your screen up, and two guys with hair under the side. Okay? Right. I'm going to talk about the markets briefly and where we are. Last time, 101, 2 weeks ago, we were still clinging on to 7,700 when Pete and I were on here and I were a little lonesome. And the markets, as I've been tracking them, 24th of May, Wednesday, yeah, 1 week ago today, the FTSE 100 closed at 7,627, down 1.75%. The AIM share dipped for the first time that I noticed, anyway, in recent months, below the 8,000 mark, which I've been tracking for absolutely ages, and it dipped down 1.4%. At 796, yeah, that's what just about last week was when all the fuel was being thrown around regarding concerns about the US debt ceiling, and obviously that's not gone away. Although there's muted talk about we've come to an agreement, we're getting to an agreement, so on and so forth, we've not got that cleared up yet. Thursday 25th, the FTSE went down a further 0.74% to 7,570, and AIM went down even further to 792, down another 0.5%. Today, the FTSE has actually given up 7,500. This is how quickly things move around. We were clinging on to 7,700 2 weeks ago, and we can't even hold on to 7,500 2 weeks later. Down 1.01% today, the FTSE 100. And it closed sub 7,500 at 7,446. The FTSE AIM All share closed down 0.5% again at 782. So that's how fast we've moved. We've given up several percentage points since we were last here. So where next? I think where next we get to the markets, we get something from the US to say definitively we've reached an agreement regarding debt ceiling. And that should be a little bit of a, hopefully a boost for the markets. And we get a bit of a relief rally. How long it will last, how far it will go, I don't know. Got to caveat this with the fact that actually today is the 31st of May, the last day of the month. Tomorrow, a whole new month begins the 1st of June. And potentially we have those monthly investors that are dropping money into the market, institutional investors that put money at the beginning of the month, and that might give us a boost also. We do not want to see the FTSE 100 giving up 7,400 tomorrow or the rest of this week, because that could be the beginning of us heading too close towards 7,000. And if we give that up in the summer, and as Pete keeps pointing out, summer months are really, really boring. Difficult markets, low liquidity, low volume, and the markets could give up 7,000 just like that if we're not careful. So anybody wants to give any thoughts here? Alex, Wheelie, Henry, regarding the markets. Who wants to say anything about the markets? Thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, one of the things that you know, we're recording this, as you say, on Wednesday, 31st of May. The key thing is with this debt ceiling that Congress and the US Congress and the US Senate both sign it off. It's got to be done, I believe, by something like the 5th of June. So it's really into next week. So I think there's a good chance it's going to drag on this week and make, I don't know if they're doing it over the weekend. Maybe they'll you know, get it finally signed up over the weekend or something. But I mean, there's a good chance the rest of this week is going to be a bit soggy. And then the start of next week, hopefully we'll see a change to that. And I think we'll see a good rally because it's really sold off. So I think we'll see a good bounce. It's interesting, when you look at the FTSE 100 tonight, the RSI, I reckon it must be down to about RSI 30, which is an oversold level. And I think quite a few of them are starting to get low. So that's sort of telling us as well that the fear is getting set in. I find the RSI brilliant for that. So, I mean, my sort of sense on it is that we will get a bounce. Then I think we're into a summer grind. And I think that I don't, especially with this sell-off now, and the fact we had a sell-off fairly recently with that bank situation, you know, Silicon Valley Bank, I can see the summer just being tedious, just grinding around and just being a pain, really. I don't think we're going to see any massive drops. We won't see any massive rises. That's my sort of take on it.
Cool. Yep. Any thoughts, Henry?
Yeah, I think I was reading something earlier today about the composition of the S&P 500. So I'm aware over here we look at, you know, the FTSE 100, the FTSE 250, but we tend to follow the US markets quite strongly. When they go up, we go up, and when they go down, we go down. And this article I was reading was suggesting that the S&P 500 is now largely being driven by six or seven large names. You know, you've got Microsoft, Apple, Facebook, the FANGs, plus Nvidia, which has just gone through the $1 trillion market cap. Outside of those, the American market really isn't looking that healthy. Most names are on a quite a heavy dip at the moment. And it just makes me wonder, actually, is there much strength out there? You know, if people decide that they want to take a little bit of profit out of these top names in the S&P, maybe that's going to pull their index down and take ours down with it. I could see that happening.
That's a possibility. I think the scary thing is you've got Nvidia that is up year to date. This is a company that's gone on from the lows of the year in January. Yeah. Up at the last count when I looked, I think earlier today, up year to date, 174%. This is a monster company that's up 100. There's companies that are boring, tiddly little AIM companies that haven't managed 170% in 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah.
And now this is a $1 trillion company and it's still going, it's still going, it's still going. I put a tweet out yesterday because we lost William O'Neill, one of the sages that actually educated me from being the investor I was pre-2000 to actually looking. And one of his quotes, famous quotes, is that, you know, the companies that outperform and they're more successful for investors are the ones with the highest PE. And I was like, nah, that can't be right. I was actually fighting it in 1999, 2000, fighting it. I was going, no, that can't be right. Nvidia's on a PE of 202. 202. Right? The average PE of the FTSE, probably Alex will tell us a bit later on, the FTSE All Share is probably about 18, 19, maybe even 20 at a peak. 202, and it's gone to being a trillion. It's just mad, mad. Thoughts on the markets, Alex?
Yeah, I mean, just to pick up on the 2 points there, guys, Henry's points about market breadth, very good point. The reality is that a small number of stocks is taking the S&P much higher. And secondly, that the big theme this year to date, from a sector point of view, which is music to my ears as a sort of tech TMT guy, is AI, artificial intelligence. I'm sure you guys have covered this before. But this is a story that continues to gain momentum. And I suspect investors everywhere are now looking to get exposure to this. I posted something about a week ago on the back of the NVIDIA Analyst Day, Investor Day in the States. And 20 Wall Street brokers jacked up their target prices on the name. from about $250 to about $500, effectively doubling their valuation on the stock. And the point to make is that this is on the back of a genuinely optimistic and, dare I say, bullish outlook by NVIDIA, talking about accelerated computing and how AI is really going to transform everything. And of course, what these guys do, for people who don't know, essentially they manufacture chips, CPUs, GPUs for data centers. And data centers are going to be a big beneficiary of the explosion of demand in AI and data, which is created by AI. So, from a market point of view, Henry's bang on. There's narrow breadth here. That would be a worry ordinarily. But I've been here before with big themes. And the big theme right now is AI. And I don't see that going away. So back to Wheely's earlier point, if we get over this debt ceiling issue in the US, I can just see continuing momentum. And of course, I think in the back of our sort of collective wisdom, back of our minds, we're all trying to second guess when the Fed stops putting rates up. Because that's what we've seen this year, right? We've seen what, 10 rate rises back to back in quick succession. I've never seen anything like this before, but the market is trying to second guess, have we maxed out? Have we peaked? If so, where will rates be in 9, 12 months' time? What does that mean for equities? So I get the feeling that the market's trying to look ahead, and is trying to call the top of the rate cycle. I do accept that we could be in for a sluggish summer, but I think after that, assuming rates have maxed out, I think we're good to go Q3, Q4, and I'd be quite bullish about the second half, albeit probably Q3, Q4 weighted rather than Q3. So yeah, I feel we're in a pretty good place. If somebody had told me this would have happened 4 or 5 months ago, I would have been a little bit surprised. Growth investing appeared to have fallen out of favor, but I think we're good to go again, and I feel relatively optimistic, albeit that's from a sort of US-centric perspective. I think closer to home in the UK, I'm afraid we're still getting too many profit warnings from some of our nearest and dearest on AIM. We need that to sort of break out, to stop. But I probably feel more optimistic today than I would have done maybe 3 or 4 months ago.
Okay. What I'm conscious of, what we need to do, I really appreciate the feedback, guys, and your thoughts on the market. It's good to have differing views on it all. Regarding what's causing it and what's the potential is going forward. I want now, Alex, for you to just spend about 5 minutes tops is just give a quick overview as to your background and why you can share the level of insights that you can and where
Sure.
you've been historically, and even throw out some names of some of the places you've worked and the individuals you've worked with, so people get you've talked
Yeah.
about breadth of your expertise. And then we can get back
Sure.
into a few stocks, starting with Wheely sharing some stocks, then to Henry, then back to yourself, and then I'll share something.
So for the benefit of Henry and Wheely, I was introduced to Peter by a guy called Philip Oakley, who's quite a well-known markets commentator and journalist. And a former analyst, and I used to work with him 20 years ago at a bank called Charterhouse. His specialism was transport and infrastructure. Mine was sort of internet and technology. And although we haven't really kept in close touch, we've always followed each other on Twitter. And through Phil, I sort of engaged with Peter about 2 or 3 months ago now. And so I started basically working in the UK stock market in the late 90s after leaving uni. And I worked for firms like Charterhouse, the big French bank Crédit Agricole, the big Dutch bank ING, the UK firm Panmure Gordon, the UK firm Peel Hunt, and a couple of smaller brokers, Cenkos Securities, which is now doing a deal with FinCap, and latterly with a little company called Arden Partners, which focused very much on AIM and very much on small and micro caps. I left there in mid-Feb this year, having been their director of technology for a couple of years. So I worked with a number of their corporate clients, did a number of IPOs and secondary capital raises. And as I said earlier, my specialism generally has been internet tech, digital, bit of media, that sort of stuff. So typically quite asset light business models, quite growth oriented business models. Obviously benefiting from the evolution of the internet and the evolution of smartphones, the growth of the consumer economy, all that sort of stuff. And businesses that could be domiciled in Israel, could be domiciled in the US, could be domiciled in the UK. And stocks that did very, very well, as you guys know, 2021, 2020, 2021, a lot of IPOs in that period, had a shocker last year. 2022 was not a good year for tech, mainly because of the rate rises and the shift into energy and energy stocks. So I've been an analyst, I've been an advisor, I've done a little bit of sales, and I've had to deal throughout my career really with the sort of the big stick, which is that the UK doesn't get tech, which I've always thought was a bit of a red herring, quite frankly. But what is true is that generally we haven't had much big tech. We've had lots of little tech, but not much big tech. And right now, of course, if you read the papers, you'll see there's a lot of debate about how we make the UK more accessible for IPOs, for tech, for growth stocks. How do we get more capital flowing? But I'm now in the luxurious positioning of not having to, work for one of those brokers or one of those banks. So I can sort of observe all this as an investor, as a spectator, as an interested observer. So yeah, I hope that gives you a flavor for what I've done. And it's a good breadth of career in the sense that I've done the mega caps, I've done the micro caps. I've been in the UK market when it was going absolutely ballistic in the early 2000s, and again 2 or 3 years ago. And now here we are now, and people have got a bit of a downer on the UK market, but I think it's slightly overdone. I think there's a lot of easy wins that we can implement, which will make us in a better place again. And the other thing, as I said to Wheelie earlier, I've seen the evolution of the market environment from a retail investor's point of view. Back in the day, there was almost no access to research, very little dialogue. These days we have, we have great infrastructure. We've got all the great websites, the great podcasts. We're all familiar with Twitter. The information flow is pretty good. Could be better still, but it's pretty good. So I've seen the market environment change, and I've seen retail investors take an interest. So yeah, that's a sort of summary of where I've come from. And I hope that sort of fits what you were looking for, Peter.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I wanted you to share with people, so people get an understanding of where you're coming from and the expertise you've got. Any questions, Pete or Henry?
Well, you might have mentioned this a bit, but so basically now you are a private investor, and that's effectively what you do. Is am I understanding that right?
Yeah, that's right. So I do a little bit of sort of consulting with former clients, on a sort of ad hoc basis. But I'm not a paid employee, and so therefore, I'm able to be a little bit more, I'm able to sort of pick and choose a bit more, comment a bit more freely. And a lot, to be honest, a lot of guys that work in the city do that, but they do it behind a pseudonym, or they do it behind a sort of adopted name on ADBFN or LSE. That's how the information flow works these days. And I have to say that, companies by and large are quite happy to have, not sophisticated, but sort of fairly well-informed retail investors taking an interest, because they know that that's where the liquidity is. One of my big learnings working at Arden, for example, one of my big learnings was that below 150 mil market cap, the institutions don't get involved very much anymore. That's changed. Back in the day when I started, the institutions would fish in small caps and micro caps. For whatever reason, and there are lots of reasons, that's dried up. It's much more now about family offices, high net worths, retail, what you might call niche investors, strategics, corporates, the household name institutions. It's not an equity strategy that they pursue in the same way they used to. Have a look at the Premier Miton release today. That'll tell you where they're seeing the flows, and it's not generally in UK small caps. That creates more inefficiency, but that creates more opportunity. That's my view.
Okay, Henry, what's your question?
I was curious if you could expand a little bit more on the easy wins, as you described them, for improving the UK markets, because that's a topic I'm particularly interested in. So I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the easy wins would be to abandon MiFID II. which is a piece of legislation or regulation that came in 1617, which effectively cut off the supply of research on companies below 200 mil market cap. So what you'll find these days is that the only research coverage on most companies below that level tends to be from the house broker or the house advisor, maybe from a paid for research company like Edison as well, or Equity Development, somebody like that. But the days of having three or four brokers on a lot of stocks has gone. When I was so that and that has an impact on liquidity, and it also it's a sort of vicious circle because it means the institutions are less comfortable investing in companies where there is no research. The good side is that creates opportunity, undervalued, misunderstood names. The bad side is you get a number of sort of horror shows or horror stories where people don't know what they're investing in. So MiFID II basically made it uneconomic for brokers to research non-corporate stocks. It's had too many negative unintended consequences, in my view, and would be an easy win for the UK out of Brexit, because MiFID II is a Brexit, it's a European piece of law. I'd like us to see roll back on that. For me, that would be a relatively easy win.
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah, I mean, I think it needs to be made because I think, really, liquidity is the key thing, isn't it? Right? When you're trading small names and micro cap names, and liquidity in itself is generally a function of market participants feeling comfortable. People's comfort level is always going to be higher if there's something to read, other than the company report and accounts. And that, back in the day when I worked for big banks, they used to, this is what this guy, Phil Oakley used to do. You would have a UK small caps team, and the UK small caps team would cover 50 to 100 stocks. It would produce lots of research, lots of data, lots of earnings per share forecasts. They would be in touch with the institutions, all the names that you know. And then typically, if a company needed to raise money, you could cornerstone an equity raise with two or three of your shareholders. All gets done very quickly, very efficiently. You don't have massive spreads on the bid and offer. You know who's trading the shares, and the management would have close relationships with those sponsoring shareholders. It's still there to some extent, but it's slipped a long way in my view. And I could give you lots of boring anecdotes about that, but to me, we do need to sort of re-energize UK institutional interest in UK equities below 150 mil, 200 mil, because at the end of the day, those guys can write big checks. So if we've got a 100 million pound tech company that needs to raise 30 million to do a deal in the US, you can try and raise the money, book build with us, but it's a lot easier to get the institutions to write those tickets. But they're less likely to do that if they don't know what the company does. So the research vacuum is a product of MiFID II. I think it'd be a relatively easy red line for the government if they want to do something to push capital markets in the UK. So that would be one example of an easy win. I mean, there's lots of more technical stuff as well, but I think for me, probably because I'm a sort of analyst by background originally, I come of it from a research perspective. We saw that the regulator will be flexible because, the regulator allowed companies to raise more than 10% of share capital during the lockdown, the COVID lockdown, during all those
Yes.
fundraisers. So there is nimbleness, there is flexibility, but I think there's a way to go. I would recommend anybody on the call or anybody watching the pod to read the recent document by UK Finance, which is a 60-page PDF. Sounds a bit dull, but actually it's got a lot of interesting info in how UK capital markets could improve going forward. Some of it's quite technical, sort of legislation and regulation. A lot of it's just common sense. So I would flag that.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Excellent.
Okay, you just
came
moved
back.
Across the screen then for a minute, but that's absolutely fine. That's fine. But thank you for sharing all of that. And hopefully at some point we'll be able to break down that PDF for everybody at some point going forward. I'm going to move now to Wheely to share some stocks, Pete, that you've done a bit of research on. Then we're going to go to Henry. But thank you for that, Alex.
Yeah, Jim, I've found there's one I'm going to mention here that is one that I noticed this morning. Now, I'm not sure, it's probably not something I'd invest in, but I think it's an interesting situation. And that is this thing called Wii Soda. It's not WEE, it's WE Wii Soda. And I think it will actually float because it's a new listing that's coming. I think it will float as Q Holdings and it's going to be listed on the main market. It wasn't clear from the quick read I had of the information today as to when, what the time scale is, but usually these things take a few months to sort of play through. It's what it is. It's a listed miner. It will be listed. It's a producing miner in Turkey. And it produces this stuff called soda ash. And apparently, soda ash is used in glass, but it's also used in good old EV, in batteries, So there's a sort of exciting connection there. I'd imagine most of the stuff is probably used more for glass and for more boring, mundane things. They also produce massive amounts of bicarbonate of soda. I think I read in it that it said that they were the biggest soda or one of the few soda ash producers outside of China. So I think that's all very interesting and all very exciting and whatever. Obviously, the challenge is that, IPOs are often a bit of a nightmare where, the selling shareholder knows a lot more about it than you do and probably knows a lot more about the valuation than you do. So it could be one of those that perhaps floats, maybe does well initially, especially if there's an EV excitement around it, but then maybe it will come back. So I just sort of bring it to people's attention really, and it's one that perhaps people could look into if they fancy so doing.
Cool. That
So
sounds interesting, Pete. Thank you for that. What's your second one?
well, another one that I mean, it's a couple, but the one that I'll go for is a company called DWF, which is a law firm. And it's very much along the model. I actually hold GTLY, Gately, myself, which is very much the same kind of thing. And what these, it's a sort of new thing that's happened in the last, I don't know, 5, 6 years or whatever. Where loads of there was a change in regulation, and law firms were enabled to list on the stock market and not just follow that sort of being partners kind of model. Anyway, DWF listed, and it follows that model of buying up lots of little lawyers, solicitors, outfits in various regions around the country and whatever. So a lot of the acquisitions it does are fairly small, and for that reason, fairly low risk in terms of what they bring to the party. But what's really interesting is that this sector is so out of favor at the moment. And I think let's just have a look at the see how the chart is doing. I think when I last looked, the chart was pretty weak on it, and it was, in a downtrend, which is never a time to go really crazy on a stock because if it's falling, there's a good chance momentum will keep falling. Yeah, looking on a 1 year chart, it's sort of going down. There may be signs it's starting to level out, perhaps, but it's in that downtrend phase, and I would imagine it will go from the downtrend phase into more of a flat kind of phase. Then at some point in the future, hopefully it'll start moving up. The interesting thing is around the valuation and stuff, because it's on a forward PE. These are from Sharepad numbers. Forward PE of 5.5, falling to 4.9, with a forward dividend of 8.8%, rising to 10.1%. Now, obviously, with anything, there's risk around everything. But I would have thought solicitors, and especially because of the diversity of a lawyer kind of operation, because there's so many bits of law that they do, I would imagine there's a fairly good chance that they will achieve their targets and will keep paying out that dividend. There's a bit of debt on it, and that's obviously come from a lot of the acquisitions and stuff. But I think it's an interesting one to look at.
Yeah, I looked at this, Pete. Where are we? I'm losing track of the days because the bank holiday Tuesday.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things was that their full year revenues was a touch down after they'd only recently updated the markets. And there wasn't any guidance on profitability as going forward. So, I think that's why. And you touched on the fact that litigation companies are out of favor. And unfortunately, they're meant to be almost uncorrelated to the market. That's why a lot of people liked them in the first place. But they seem to be completely out of favor because their revenues tend to be ever so lumpy. They do well, and then all of a sudden there's no news. And then some of the news that comes is quite poor. But with the you touched on the fact it's got an 8.8% yield at the minute. I mean, who wouldn't want that? Low PE. And
Yeah,
once this starts to generate
assuming
revenue and profitability increases, that PE is going to go up. You're still going to have the dividend yield if they can secure it. And then you've got capital gains on top. So could be an opportunity, but it's one to watch regarding their next update, really. And if they show some guidance on profitability, I think. But cheap, well, sounds cheap, but cheap can get cheaper, can't it?
That's the reason. I think a lot of the companies in this sector, like I say, I hold Gately myself. I think they get hit because of concerns around property. I think Gately has quite a bit of exposure to property related work. I'm not sure if that's the case with DWF, but they do have quite a diversification. All of the listed law firms do tend to be in a lot of different specialist areas of law. And I think that gives them a good degree of diversification. So, be interesting to see how it plays out.
Okay. Any comments, Alex or Henry, regarding DWF?
I couldn't really add a lot to that from what Wheely said. It's not a space I particularly know well. I mean, I would have
That's
thought
okay. That's
just sort of common sense would tell me that, we could be looking at quite a lot of insolvency work in the first part of this year. So some of
yeah.
these litigation firms should do well. If I had any caveats, it would just be, how easy is it for them to get paid themselves? But I don't know the names as anywhere near as well as Wheely, so I'll defer to him. I mean, I would have thought there's a good consolidation or roll-up story for some of these stocks if they can pick up cheaper firms for solicitors, maybe regionally.
Absolutely, that's what they're doing.
That's
Absolutely,
what
yeah. And
they're all doing.
I think it's a model they're all doing. I think with Gately's doing stuff in the Middle East as well. So I think there's massive ability for the roll-up model, and as you say, they can buy these things fairly cheap. They can probably buy a sort of, regional small lawyer solicitor kind of office. They can probably buy it on like a multiple of 4 or 5 times, and they could, as you say, it could easily be on a multiple of 10, 12 in time, so they could turn out really good little acquisitions and reasonably low risk because it's just bolt on.
No,
I mean,
cool. Thank you for that. Sorry, go on, Alex.
Well, I was going to say, Peter, was, I mean, just as a general rule, I think the stock market responds quite well to obviously to upgrade stories, EPS upgrade stories. One of the ways you can generate EPS upgrades is if you're a public company and you can arbitrage your multiple by buying private companies on lower multiples. And so you begin to maybe make 3 or 4 acquisitions a year. That adds 5 to 10% to your earnings. You're growing your own business at 5 to 10%. The market can sort of begin to factor in upgrades, and then you get a re-rating. So I like industries where there is scope for consolidation or roll-ups as a general rule. And it seems to me from the way Willie's describing it is that law could be one of those industries where roll-ups can be executed.
Yeah,
Yeah, I
and
think
there's quite a
so.
lot of firms doing exactly that. Yeah, very, very good point, really. Well confirmed and reiterated, Alex. Now, Henry, what stocks do you want to talk about? What have you got on your
Well,
radar?
I've got one I'm going to talk about in a moment, but the focus of my research recently has actually been looking at my own portfolio and trying to de-risk it. So last year was very, very cautious. I felt like there was an enormous exploded hand grenade lurking just off stage, and I was, at some point going to be thrown it. I didn't know what it was or where it was going to come from, but there was definitely one coming. if you fast forward 12 months, I now feel like I can see where the risks are in the market a lot better than I could 12 months ago. So although I'm still worried about them, I can at least see them and try to respond. So we've still got this, horrendous situation going on in Ukraine, which is causing enormous turmoil for the country and for supply chains around the world. That's caused an energy crisis, as people have cut off supply from Russia. You've also got inflation problems, which, in the UK, I think we're hovering around 10% at the minute. I forget what the precise figure is, but it seems to have shot up to 10 or 11%
It's
and stayed there for
horrendous,
nearly a year.
horrendous, whatever it is,
It is. It's not good. It's not good. And then you've got, as we mentioned earlier, interest rates that have just gone up and up and up. It's sort of every month you've got central banks that have bumped them up another quarter of a percent or half a percent. So I've been looking at my portfolio and trying to figure out how I can manage those four issues. Am I hedged against energy issues? Am I hedged against supply chain issues? Am I hedged? What's going to happen if interest rates go up another half percent to my portfolio? And so I've been trimming names here and there and trying to position myself in sectors that I think will be fairly defensive. So that's meant that I've missed things like the tech rally, which fell off a cliff, as Alex said, when people went, "Oh no, I don't want any more growth," and then rebounded really sharply. The only tech name I bought at the bottom was Microsoft, which I managed to get at around $250, and it shot straight back up. It's gone up sort of 40% in 6 months, and I'm now thinking, well, hang on a minute, that's a very different price to where I bought it. Maybe I want to take a bit of profit off the table. But I'm very much in not in acquisition mode really at the moment. I'm looking at my portfolio and trying to figure out, how are these four big themes going to impact my portfolio? My only caveat to that is a company called ASML, which is in the silicon chip space. So obviously we've all just seen what Nvidia's done, shooting through the roof. Everybody wants microchips and they want the best manufacturers of microchips. But I'm not sure who the best manufacturer actually is. I'm not sure it's Nvidia at, a P of 202. But Nvidia need lots of things to make their microchips. They need, raw materials, silicon and whatever. But they also need certain technologies. So ASML do what's called advanced lithography. Basically, printing designs onto circuit boards. And that technology is one that is required for a chip manufacturer like Nvidia to actually produce their chips. And unlike Nvidia, it's got the benefit of not being in the news 24/7 at the moment. So, my research at the moment is trying to focus on companies like that that will help Nvidia or Intel or whoever to succeed in manufacturing that. Chips, but might ne not necessarily be on the front lines producing them themselves. So that's the kind of direction I'm looking in at the moment.
Yeah, I can see why you would do that, and it goes back to the adage of buying in the sector that does the picks and the shovels for the hottest markets. And there's
Exactly.
another one in that space, TSMC, that do the foundry for
Yep.
the chip sector, and they will probably do well because all of the chip industry, once that gets boosted with the Nvidia et al, that could be one of the big winners going forward as well. I'm not sure of the PE, I've not looked at it recently, but they're going to be inundated with work if the chip industry does fly like everyone claims it's going to be. But going back to what Alex was saying earlier and regarding valuation, it's currently a $1 trillion company, that's up 174% plus or whatever, plus or minus a couple of percent year to date. Is that too hot for the year? Personally, I'm a tech guy. I'm a contrarian. I'm like, whoa, anyone wants to chase that right now, crack on. I'm just leaving it. I'm leaving it alone. It could end up being plus 250% by the end of the year. But I won't be one that's chasing it. Let the others want to chase it, chase it. Alex, I'm conscious of the time, so we want to get to you now to
Yep.
share your two stocks. Henry, did you have another one, by the way, after that?
No,
Or
no.
no? Cool. Alex, go
That's
with
me
your
done.
two stocks or what you want to share, please.
Yeah, so guys, I want to leave the listeners and everybody that my view is that we need digital infrastructure as a theme. Okay, so you can play digital infrastructure in many ways. You can play it through ETFs, where you get diversified exposure to ASML, NVIDIA, Palantir, guys like that. But just have that as the big theme in your mind: digital infrastructure, data centers, computer centers. This is not going to go away, this theme. So have that in your mind. Then I'm going to give you five or six UK software or tech stocks, which have actually not performed that well, but could be due a bounce. So in no particular order, Calnex, Eleco, Spirent, Dot Digital, and Keyword Studios. Some of those are service providers in tech. Some of them are digital infrastructure stocks. And some of them have really nice sort of SaaS applications, like Eleco, for example. I won't go into too much detail on any of those right now, but that little short list gives you some small caps and some big caps, which I think are worth looking at for any investor that likes tech or growth. As I say, the funny thing about the UK market year to date, 2023, in tech is that actually we've had quite a few horror stories. Obviously, One Disco is the one we all know about, but lots of these guys have had profit warnings. So you need to have confidence that when you invest in some of these names, you're doing so, you're doing so in that context. But I think if investors take a lead from what's going on with digital infrastructure, take a lead from Nvidia, they will find some interesting opportunities in UK tech at the moment. There's some of the names I would push, but the theme is digital infrastructure. And you will make money by investing in digital infrastructure on a sort of 2 to 3 year view.
Well, I hope you're right regarding that, because I've got a lump of money in Spirent, which has been an absolute dog, and I still own it. And I'm not planning on selling it. I'm just waiting and waiting to see when they come out with some good news and the catalyst changes, because there's been so many stocks that, you've mentioned the space has been, dogged with really negative news. Everything linked to telecom and AI, and is in a small sort of FTSE All Share, FTSE AIM Share sort of space, has had profit warning, profit warning. And you're like, when's there going to be some good news for any UK listed stocks that are in that sort of space? Then I think maybe even Henry's in the same space as me with digital infrastructure, DGI9, you know what I mean? As another sort of infrastructure play. And even that's going chartwards wise, but we haven't bought it for immediate catalyst to be, and profits to be made. It's because it pays a nice dividend. It's going to be something that's absolutely a necessity, and eventually it will come good. But as you say, at the present time in the UK markets, tech is unloved, and we're watching overseas, watching that everyone else overseas just go like that, and UK tech's going in the opposite direction.
If you're interested in diversified exposure and you're happy to invest outside the UK, look at some of the ETFs there are, which are focused around AI and robotics. You can just Google them. That will give you diversified exposure. That will give you intraday liquidity in terms of trading. It's iShares, it's GlobalX, Robo, people like that. It may be a bit left field for some investors, but this is a liquid way to play this theme of digital infrastructure. Sometimes with the UK, I get a little bit too worried about stock-specific risk. I investing in
Yes.
small companies which are accident prone, which are not perfect, which have supply chain issues. Sometimes for some investors, it's better to have a more diversified approach, de-risk your strategy. But yeah, I hope that gives people an insight into what I'm looking at anyway.
No, that's cool. Cool. Any questions, Pete? Any
Well, I
questions
think
with
that's an
me?
interesting collection. I mean, there's a couple of differences there in that the ones that stand out to me as the infrastructure theme are Calnex, which does like sort of, I think, measuring type stuff for telecoms equipment networks, I think. SPT Spirent, which I think is more about testing of like 5G networks, 4G networks, that kind of thing. KWS slightly different, and it's more of it's really a video gaming studios kind of business.
That's right.
But linking to what we said earlier, it's very much a roll-up story because they've been abs I mean, when it first listed, I thought, I don't know about this, because it was doing so many acquisitions. But fair play, they've done really well. They've been buying loads and loads of different studio, getting all these different studios that do like translation of video game stuff or rendering of video game stuff or what, all different sort of functions that are needed to create a video game. They've been absolutely brilliant at it, so I really like that. Elco, I think it's like building sort of like software kind of stuff, construction software. So that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting collection you've named there. Yeah.
It's KWS is a roll-up story, and it's exposed to a sector which has fallen out of bed, but which has good long-term growth potential. Looks like the Microsoft Activision deal is going to get signed off ultimately. So, don't forget gaming. It's had a bad 12 months, but it's still a long-term growth sector. KWS piggyback on the back of that.
Yeah, it makes
Any
sense.
questions for anything regarding what Alex said regarding that space? Because you've got some exposure to it as well, haven't you? And previously worked in it as well.
I think Alex is bang on with this idea that digital infrastructure is here to stay. The only one of those names I've looked at and been interested in is actually Spirant.
Oh, we're doomed.
So, keyword. I would have personally, I'd avoid it like the plague. I don't like software firms and I don't like gaming because they're so transient. So one minute you love Call of Duty, the next minute everybody's playing Modern Warfare or whatever the latest things are. And it's really hard to predict that. Whereas the testing firms, I think it's a little bit easier to validate. Well, yes, we're selling 3,000 digital wrenches this month and next month we're going to sell 4,000. So the first kind of couple of names on that list really piqued my interest. But I also really, really agree with that idea of getting broad exposure through an ETF. iShares is a name and a brand that I've got a lot of respect for, and they've got some really wonderful ETFs that you can just go and sit and trawl through and look at what they've bought. And it's a really good way of dipping your toe in the sector without, like you say, risking buying something that drops 40% on a profit warning.
Yeah, I'm still worried about liquidity in UK small and micro caps. So if you own a name and it has a warning, I'm just worried that the reaction to the downside is just too extreme right now.
It is brutal.
That will change, but it is an issue right now.
Yeah, I mean, talking about liquidity, I'm muted on here. Probably a month and a bit ago. About a stock that I'd got my eye on, and I was wondering about regarding it. I'm not sure
We've
where
lost
Alex has
him.
gone. I
Oh,
know he's up in Scotland at the
what did we
moment,
say?
and he's disappeared. So hopefully he'll come back. If not, this is it now for the rest of the show. But he did warn me that he had a hard close at 7 o'clock, and it's now 7:01. So
He
maybe.
probably had to move
The
on.
meter up in Scotland has been cut off. I'm not sure. But one of the stocks we spoke about, or I spoke about without speaking about, was a stock I had my eye on that I'd researched for forever and a day. And I've been watching it and watching it. And via various conversations, I think I'd given too many clues away regarding the stock. And then on podcast 100, I mentioned on there because James Wan James was on that show. I said, "Oh, it's a stock that James Wan James holds, and the ticker symbol begins with T." Without thinking about what I'd actually done, it's like come out of my mouth because I was in the moment. And then I watched the stock over the period of weeks go from, I think it was about £2, £2.12, £2.15. At the beginning of May, just carry on going up on no news and no news and no news. I'm thinking, bugger, those people found out which stock or they've worked out which stock, that I was going to go and buy because there's no news. Why is it going up 5%, 10%, 15% over the course of that week and that week and that week? Anyway, lo and behold, right, the share goes from low two tens at the beginning of May all the way up to £2.64, right? Last week, the 25th, right? And I'm going, it's gone up too much now for me to buy. And the news is out next week regarding their Q1 data. So I'll wait. Tuesday, markets RNS. I'm reading the RNS. I'm going, oh, Tremor, yeah, is the name of the company. Yeah,
TRMR.
TRMR. And I'm looking at it, I'm going, that doesn't read well. That doesn't read well. And it's going to get hammering. Yeah. Or the markets will think, actually, we'll look past that. But as Alex said, you know, anything without liquidity, and then you warn or you don't produce positive news, market will absolutely spank you. So the shares open at, well, they didn't open at the, they closed the day before at £2.60 odd. They opened, well, went to an intraday low, should I say, correct myself, of £2.18. Yeah. So they're down 20% ish, there or thereabouts. And I've read the RNS, I'm reading their RNS again. I'm looking, and what one thing, one little glimmer of, you know, this is an opportunity here, just struck me. And I looked at it, and it was the company's net cash. This is a company with a 300-ish market cap at this stage, right? Having been spanked. And they've got $89.1 million in cash, which is equivalent to $71.9 million in cash. And I'm going, bosh. I've already done all my research beforehand. Everyone's looking at profit, profit, profit. Every single metric on TRMR was poor. I nearly used another word there, was poor, right? And I saw the cash, and I've looked at all its peers in the US and elsewhere, and they're all on multiples and multiples and multiples of what TRMR is on. So I bought it, bought some shares in my little trading pot at 228, more than 228. And I watched it, and eventually the market went, okay, that's enough now. The shorters that were shorting it were leaving the building. The people that were racing out of it that had only recently bought it at £2.60 had already sold. £2.50, they'd already sold at 220, 225, so on and so forth. So I buy it at 228 plus. The day goes by and the shares end up closing on Tuesday at £2.80. It goes from minus 20% to plus 8, maybe 9% closed at a 29% move in one whole day.
That's incredible. Right?
Yes. So I'm already up 22, 23%. And I'm thinking, hmm, it's meant to be a trade, Pete. It's meant to be a trade, Pete. Let me see what happens tomorrow. Right? So I'll leave it running. Yeah. This morning, it opened lower, went higher. Yeah. And then it rolled over. So I've actually exited a 24-hour trade, less than 24-hour
nice
trade.
Nice one.
For 21%, I've been sold out at plus 275 plus. So that was a trade. So that's what I wanted to just tell you about, a trade regarding my portfolio. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because it goes back to what I was saying about the tech, and Alex has said before regarding the tech space, is that it's unloved. This is a company that essentially is a, you know, an Israeli company, Pete. I know you don't like them, right?
Wow. Yeah. I've actually done
and
quite
it's
well
unloved.
On them.
It's on a tiny, on every single metric. It's on a subpar metric. Nobody likes it. It's had this cash. It's profitable. It's not as profitable this time around, but it's completely unloved. And I just nipped in, nipped out, and bagged 21%, more than 21%, and I've moved on. And I'm trying to get my little trading pot to make myself 300%. I made 200% on THG. I've made 21% of that, which I'm going to add to the pot, and then I'll do what else is going forward. But the opportunities are there. It was a high-risk punt for me for the cash. I didn't expect it to move from 228 to finish at 280 yesterday. And it went to 294, I think, today. And I've bailed at more than 275.5. So I'm done. But keep your eye out, folks. And regardless of what someone says about this stock, this RNS this morning, it's going to be a great RNS. They're very rarely returning in the evening to tell you that the stock they said was a great RNS, that they hold the stock, is down 35 or 25 or 30%. But if they say it's, oh, I'm worried about it, or it's a great RNS, and it turns out to be a great RNS, after 5 o'clock, they'll be back telling you that it's a great RNS, they own it, and it's up 15, 25%. They need to do both, as I always say, be open and transparent regarding it all.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, You know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEAKS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the TWINPEAKS promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
Henry, Wheely, any comments?
You know, Tremor, I just find it, I always comment, when I comment about it on Twitter, I always say it's an enigma, it's a mystery. None of it makes sense to me. I don't really follow why a company with so much cash that has actually produced reasonable results in the past and all the rest of it, it's just so unloved. And it makes me wonder if there's something in the background that is sort of, you know, a bit of a problem with it. And that's what, it's one of those, you know, when something's too good to be true, it's almost got that sort of sense about it. And I sort of think...
It's got a stigma to it, Pete. It's got a stigma to it.
It's got a stigma to it.
The people that are previously involved with it.
Sometimes there's a reason for that. And I just
absolutely.
I just think, is Tremor one of those? It's just got that sort of smell about it. So who knows? I hope that holders do well on it. And I hope it turns out to be a brilliant company. But hey, who knows?
Yeah, mate, we'll see. It's on a low PE. Some people have held it for years and done really well out of it. Some people... really dislike the company, like you say, because of all the reasons why they're looking in going, I don't understand it, I don't trust it. But it's in a tech space, you know, ad tech, gaming tech, you name it, they're involved in so much exposure to the tech space. And at some point or other, if it gets revalued, it will be a £3, £4 stock. If anything comes out of that woodwork, mate, any skeletons, Pete, like you say, it will get smashed. It will get absolutely nailed. And people will say, told you so. But right now, no one really knows. Henry, you're very quiet there. It's like we're making you tremor.
No, I've just pulled up the price chart on it, actually. So it operates in a space to another one of my holdings, S4 Capital, digital advertising sort of business.
Yeah, absolutely.
And looking at this range, it's gone from £2 up to £8, a little bit like S4 Capital. And then it's come all the way back down the hill again, back down to 279 or whatever it's at the minute. My only observation with businesses like this, and it goes for DWG, was it we were discussing earlier?
DWF.
I used to hold Begbie's Trainer professional services. They're all professional services, different sectors. But the basic concept is you get some clever people in the door. They do some clever stuff on paper or on a machine these days, and they charge it to a client that can't do it for themselves. The only problem with these businesses is, one, there's very little to keep the client in the room most of the time. They could go down the road. And two, there's very little to keep the staff in the room. They could go down the road. And that's why, in my experience or my opinion, these businesses don't tend to be very highly rated.
Yeah, it's a fair reason.
You never get around that risk. And so the financials can look amazing. You know, you've got 70 million in cash on the balance sheet, no debt, like wonderful, but you've still got that big risk there.
Yeah, that's a very, very good point. And like you say, I think the difficulty is that once you're in that sort of mold of being lowly rated and you've got any sort of flies around you or suspected flies or potential flies around you, It really doesn't matter how well you do. There's a company years back that Pete and I held called Tellit. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
An AI company, early AI company. I loved it to bits, but again, it was an Israeli company, you know, in a tech space with dodgy people. And then eventually it turned out it was dodgy, right? And
then
I'd long gone, and eventually they had a takeover. But boy, oh boy, some things that came out of the woodwork, and that doesn't help a company like Tremor. Yeah.
Exactly.
And so that's what happens sometimes regarding these companies. We end up, some get tainted, and the overspill gets tainted because of the historical stuff that other people have done. So yeah, it's a difficult one. But yeah, I've been in and I've been out, gone, and I'm looking for my next trade. Yeah, I'm not turning into a trader. For all those people that are worried, I'm not turning into a trader. I'm just dipping in, dipping out. 21% in 24 hours. I think most traders would be happy with that. Right, I'm going to take a brief break now and bring people up to speed with what happened regarding last month's winner. Last month's winner, we told you that was at Nan Queeb N. He's going to be in the process now, if not even he's done it already, having his monthly, a month subscription to ShareScope. They're going to spend some time helping him adapt to the platform. So he was April's winner. We're going to announce May's winner next month. Additional to his other his subscription to ShareScope for a month, he's also chosen this book, which is the How to Pick Quality Shares book by Phil Oakley. It's becoming a popular pick. I think that's the second pick out of three so far of the picks. We'll see what this month's winner picks when we announce it in 2 weeks' time. I also want to talk about the charity, which thank you ever so much for you ladies and gents that have donated money to it. And thank you all for your feedback and those people that subscribe to YouTube. Keep clicking onto YouTube, folks, and make that subscription, which is free, and other platforms as well. And we'll get to 1,000 the quicker that you guys do that and ladies do that. The charity fund, the charity fundraising page, Just Giving page for Memphis, is www.justgiving.com/fundraising/ Twin Peaks Challenge 2-3, numerical 3. We are sitting right now at 1978. Yeah, I don't even think Henry was born then. 1978. I was already been born. Pete was definitely born before
I've
that
definitely
day.
been born in 1978.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're a bit older.
Oh, that was about
And I
40
think
then.
Alex might have been born around that before that time as well. So we're just shy of 2,000, folks. If you can help us out with a little donation, that'd be absolutely brilliant. I want to say a big thank you to at Tigers Revival, and that individual's called Russ Powell, and he's made a donation of £20 plus £5 gift aid. And his message was, great podcast. Thank you and your guests for giving me valuable insights, which have helped me to adjust my investing in a way that is now more beneficial to me. More than happy to give something back. Russ,
Excellent.
thank you ever so much. That's brilliant. I love the
Thanks
last
for
bit
that.
there regarding being happy to give something back. That's what we're asking everyone to try and do and think about and consider other people as well. We've got another donation from at buy 100 ounces silver 5, at buy 100 OZ silver 5. Thank you ever so much. And that person's comment, I don't know if it's male or female. Great call, gents. Thanks for all the podcasts you put out. Brilliant. Thank you for that £25 and £6,
Bye.
25 gift aid. And we've got at
Go on.
Eclectic Trends. Eclectic Trends. And he or she's words are, congratulations on 100 not out. Glad to support this fantastic cause. And they deposited, donated, gave Memphis £100 plus £25 gift aid. So thank you all,
Yeah,
the three of
lovely.
you, for those donations. Really, really, really appreciate it. Most kind of you. And that brings us up to speed with the charity. If you can support us and make a donation, have a listen to this, or enjoyed any of the podcasts previously, please just donate a fiver or a tenner or whatever you can afford to give. And yeah, do what you can. And just one more thing before I go. If you go into your shopping supermarket that you use mainly and you see a shopping trolley that's empty and there's a little sign above it, it will be because there's collecting food for food banks. If you can put a tin of beans in there, a loaf of bread in there, any sort of thing that's not perishable, put it in that trolley and they'll take it to a food bank and they'll help people that are absolutely
Glenn.
hungry or suffering from food poverty, and that will help the food banks going forward. They're absolutely being inundated at the moment because people are struggling regarding the, energy crisis, food prices, mortgages going up, being put out of work, all manner of different things. There are people in paid employment, including firemen, social workers, teachers, you name it, policemen, public sector workers and other workers who are struggling to actually feed their families despite being in work. So imagine the situation if you're not in work, yeah, and your heating bill's gone up twofold, or the landlord's put up your rent 15-25%. So if you can afford to do it, just drop a little tin of beans or some toiletries or whatever you can, or even a little teddy for a kid in the basket, and you can help. Okay, guys, ladies, gents, thank you very much. What do you want to add, Pete? Anything you want to add regarding all the charity stuff, all the stock stuff, the market stuff? Well, we've done an hour and a bit now. I'm going to keep this quite short, this one.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, fantastic. Thanks for the donations and stuff. That's been absolutely brilliant, you know, and the lovely comments. It's been really, really great to hear, you know.
Absolutely. Henry, any comments regarding stock, shares, charity, stuff that you've seen regarding the stuff I've just mentioned regarding the markets? Or charity stuff?
I'd just like to reiterate your point on the food bank, actually. I mean, number one, well, before I say that, thank you for having me on the show. It's been a pleasure. On the food banks, every supermarket does have them. I guarantee you every supermarket has got basket or a trolley or something. Some of them will be manned, some of them will not be manned. It costs £1 to put a tin of tinned peaches in there, which would be something nice. Some of them will have boards asking for something. But when you put something in there, if you've got a bit of time, have a think about what else you could do to help the charity. So our local one in Wimbledon is called Don's. There is always somebody there that will talk to you about what the charity does, and you can volunteer to go and help package the food, sort the food, parcel the food, and also deliver the food, because some of the people that use the food banks don't have the means to get themselves to the food bank. And so the charity will bring the food to your door, help unpack it for you, and just check on how you're doing. And that all takes time out of people's days. They're not paid for doing this. And it's just a little something. You don't have to commit to doing it, you know, every week, three times a week or whatever, just once a month, whenever you've got the time. But it can make a huge difference to people that are in really vulnerable situations, you know. So the next time you're there, have a think about what else you could do alongside, you know, dropping a tin of peaches in or whatever it is you're dropping in. And it will go a long way to helping people that really need it.
Absolutely great point, mate. Absolutely great point. And this is the importance of thinking about others and showing kindness, which is what I keep reiterating on Twitter and also, you know, on this podcast. You know, there are lots of people in lots of difficulties, and we need to do what we can to help other people. Right, I'm conscious of the time. I'm just going to mention again the UK Investor Show, which is a week on Friday from today's date. So that's the, let me get my bearings right, the 9th of June, a Friday in London at the QE2 Conference Centre in London, UK Investor Show. I've got a panel session I'm doing with Investing Matters. I've got five absolutely stellar guests. One of them, what you've just seen, is going to be there, which is Alex de Groot, is going to be on the panel session with me. Stephen Yu of Blue Whale Capital. Gabriel Boyle from Troy Asset Management. George Barrow of Polar Capital, and Gervais Williams of Premier Miton. They're going to be on the panel session, which I'm going to be chairing. So please, please, please come and see us. We'll be on in room 2, I think it is, at 10:30, but get there early, because otherwise you're going to see probably Henry or someone else sat in the front seats like that. So if you can join us there, it'll be great. We'll be recording it so you can get a refined version of it as well, depending on your seating regarding the room. But we're hoping to have a full, that room will be full. So get there a little bit earlier than 10:30 to make sure you get a seat. Okie dokie, that's me covered. Pete, is there anything you want to add before we close this off?
Well, there's something I need to talk about, and that's that obviously, you know, regular listeners, viewers of the calls are used to the format we've been running. The format's changing slightly because you notice Henry and Alex have joined us on the call. They're actually going to be regular contributors now, and they're going to be with us all the time. Now, I'm actually going to take advantage of that. So partly so that you can get to know Henry better and you can get to know Alex, who you've only met for the first time today. I'm actually not going to be on the next few podcasts. I'll be out for a little while, whatever. And it's partly because of my health and stuff, and partly because I want a summer break. So that's what's happening going forward. So the next couple of podcasts I won't be on. I can hear the cheers. Don't give the guys a good chance because it's well worth listening to. I think they're both excellent guys to have on the podcast. And I think it's well worth listening to what they've got to say. And of course, we get a good range of levels of experience and different backgrounds and all the rest of it, which will really add to everything. So that's what's happening.
Thank you for sharing that. But I think the important thing to add here is that what we're trying to do is to ensure that Pete has as much time and capacity to get himself better. Yeah. He's not disappearing. He's going to be back. Yeah. I don't want everyone on Twitter going, you know what I mean? He's not going anywhere. He'll be here. Alex is going to be on the show next time. So's Henry and myself. And in between some of the times that Pete's not around, we'll also have another guest on there, so we'll still get some guests on. But the beauty of what we're going to do going forward is that we're going to enhance it. Yeah, we're going to enhance it further to what we've always done, and hopefully you guys will get used to the new format and embrace the new format, and the fact that we've got somebody from the city with decades and decades of experience that can actually enhance what we are learning and help us learn from being on the podcast directly, so that we can then go away and research stuff ourselves and bring something more to the table going forward. So that's it, folks, for podcast 102. Sorry, Pete, go on.
Can I just say, I'm still to be around in that I'm on Twitter and stuff, and you can still see me there. So, and I'll probably still be doing my TikTok videos and things. So I still will be around. It's just I won't be on the podcast for a few episodes or whatever.
Okie dokie. All right, ladies and gents, thank you ever so much for listening to podcast 102. Thank you ever so much for your feedback for 101. Really, really appreciate it. Keep sending us your feedback regarding what you think about this particular podcast, what you thought about this one, 102. And please, 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 if you can, just subscribe to YouTube and the other platforms, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, Google, Overcast, whichever one you use, SoundCloud. I know Henry started on SoundCloud when it was like just noise. If you subscribe to SoundCloud as well, and just leave us your feedback on YouTube and elsewhere, and let us hear what your thoughts are. And if you can, make a donation. If you can, leave something in a trolley in one of the supermarkets that you use. But above all, just enjoy the good months that are ahead regarding the weather. And each and every one of you, just look out for somebody else and look after your health and just show some kindness to others, whether it be in person or in social media. Bring some positivity and cheer some people up. So lots of people are really, really struggling for lots of different reasons. And you won't know that they're struggling until they give you some backlash because you're not being positive. So try and be positive. Bring somebody some warmth, bring some kindness. Bring some smiles to people, and let's just have a good time because the summer is beginning, and I'm going to be wanting to take some time off as well. And that's when the beer starts to flow, when the sun's out for me. So enjoy, take care, God bless you all. Bye, Henry. Bye, Pete. Thank you
Thank
all, and
you.
thank you to Alex for coming on, even though he got cut off in Scotland.
That's
We
fine.
will see. We'll hopefully see him in another place next week regarding the bearings and connectivity. All right, folks, take care. God bless you all.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with Sharepad from Sharescoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.